Welcome to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from March 6th, 1997.
From the high desert in the great American Southwest, I bid you all good evening or good morning, as the case may be across all these many time zones. From the Tahitian and Hawaiian Islands, visions of palm trees, trade winds, hammocks, native girls, all the way across this great land of the Caribbean and the U.S. Virgin Islands, similar visions. South into South America, north to Santa Country at the Pole, and worldwide on the Internet. This is Coast to Coast AM. I'm Art Bell. And let me tell you what's about to occur. We have with us Kathy Kramer, a sister of the missing Philip Taylor Kramer. And we, of course, did a rather extensive program on that, during the course of which Kathy requested that Ed Dames, if he would be willing, would take a look at her brother's disappearance. He has done so. And we are going to just lay it out for you the way it is, and it doesn't always come out the way you want, would be my warning for what's about to come. Now, following that, we will keep Ed Dames on, and I've got about a gazillion questions for him and areas that I want to cover with Ed. So that's what's going to occur tonight. Tomorrow night, Alan Hale, the co-discoverer of the Hale-Bopp Comet, will be here. And then Monday night, Tuesday morning, I thought I would tell you just a little bit ahead of time that Jim Berkland, who has done a remarkable job of predicting earthquakes, a geologist, who, by the way, just made it into Who's Who in America. Congratulations, Jim Berkland. Monday night, Tuesday morning, he'll be my guest, and he says, hot times, they are a-coming. So you can look forward to that one. All right, there are a lot of new affiliates out there who probably don't know who Philip Taylor Kramer is, or for that matter, who Ed Dames is. The program has been growing so quickly. Let me begin by telling you, on my webpage tonight, in the guest area, you will see a link to Kathy Kramer's webpage, sister of the missing Philip Taylor Kramer, bass player for the group that produced a record that I have been actually occasionally using as bumper music lately, that song, Inagata Devita, by Iron Butterfly. I don't think he was there then, but he was part of that group, the bass player for Iron Butterfly. He disappeared. He was a scientist into all kinds of interesting things, like the MX guidance, missile guidance system, fractal technology, data compression schemes, and all kinds of things that were on the very cutting edge of technology. And one day at the Los Angeles airport, he simply disappeared. We did a program on that. It seemed obviously a natural for a remote viewer, and we will give you a somewhat brief explanation of remote viewing when we get Ed Dames on. But it seemed a natural possible project if Ed Dames would undertake it. He agreed to do that, and we are going to discuss the results tonight. Now, obviously, we're not going to do this raw on the air, and we notified Kathy Kramer prior to the program of the result because it is not necessarily positive, in the sense that Ed Dames sent me the following. Dear Art, Philip Taylor Kramer is dead. 2. Foul play was involved. 3. SciTech has a site description for the location of Kramer's badly decomposed body in the state of Montana. We are continuing our work, as promised. We'll keep you and key federal, state, and local officials informed. And that is all the news that I've had about Philip Taylor Kramer. There is more that we're all about to find out, including Kathy. And I want to bring Kathy on first for a moment. Hi, Kathy. Are you there? Uh-oh. It would appear that Kathy is not there. I can see I'm really going to have fun with my phone lines tonight, so I'm going to have to get Kathy back on the line. It may be one of those nights. Occasionally, I tend to suffer, I'm afraid, at the hands of the phone company that bears my name. So we'll do this and get Kathy and be right back. Okay, let's try again. Thank you very much, telephone company. Here she is, I think, Kathy Kramer. Hi, Kathy.
Hi.
Oh, good, you're here.
Okay, we did.
Sheesh.
Good evening.
Good evening. You have known for about, what would you say, Kathy, about a week ago or a little more, I called you and gave you the brief information that Ed Dames faxed to me.
Yes, uh-huh.
Okay. Your brother, Philip Taylor Kramer, disappeared how long ago?
It's been, February 12th this year was the second year anniversary, so it's now going on 3 years.
Into the third year.
Yes, uh-huh.
There was a recent flurry in the last few days when you thought perhaps, the police thought perhaps, and I guess you, that they may have located his remains, his body. But that has turned out to be a dead end. Is that correct?
Yeah, as far as we know, we don't have the official reports from the Los Angeles coroner, but as far as we know, it's not my brother because of dental discrepancies.
Okay, and these were remains that were found near the site, I guess, where he made his 911 call.
Yes, uh-huh. The area is within about, I'd say, 3 or 4 miles.
Of that. Well, then I can imagine why you would think that that might have been it. But anyway, that turned up to be a dead end.
Right.
Since the last program, Kathy, that we did, or the program we did with you, I take it that our show produced quite a number of leads.
I ended up probably with over 500 calls. And as many as I could, I sent out flyers to different people and spoke with some people. And but still we just don't. We had one group of people that are art bell listeners in San Diego that said that they would gather and dispense flyers and everything. We had a very supportive response from a lot of people.
Well, that's wonderful.
Yes,
I understand that. We actually produce more calls than the TV shows. And
that's right.
That's amazing. It really is amazing.
We had calls from Canada. We had calls from all over the United States, and, we had a lot of people call.
All right, well, I wish that the news, Kathy, was better, and I understand, I hear you coughing. I know, you got the flu on top of everything else. So I'm gonna put you back on hold for a second, Kath,
okay. And
bring Ed Dames on so that everybody understands what it is they're about to hear. So sit tight for just a minute. Ed, are you there?
I'm here.
Well, miracle of miracles. Thank you, phone company. And there is a web link to Ed Dames' site on my webpage tonight as well. Ed has a new webpage, and I imagine it's even further developed than the last time we spoke, Ed. So if you want to go to Ed Dames' website, go to www.artbell.com, and over you go to the Ed Dames website. Ed, there are a lot of new affiliates, and I know it's rough. If you can give me about a 5 or 6 minute explanation, and everybody else, of what it is that you do, remote viewing, so they will understand what they're about to hear. I know it's tiresome to repeat it, but what is, please, remote viewing? Short version.
Art, the short version is what my company does for a living, and that's technical remote viewing. Technical remote viewing is essentially using an innate psychic ability, one that we're born with. It's a trained ability. The training technique was formerly a top secret technique used by the Department of Defense. I was the operations and training officer for the team that employed it successfully in mostly terrorist operations, drug enforcement operations, those kinds of things.
And by the way, Ed, this really is important because there are a lot of people who will criticize you when you say you were part of the military program. Listen to me, folks. Say what you will, but I have a copy of Ed's complete military record, and what he's telling you is exactly correct. So I want to set everybody straight on that particular point. Your military record, Ed, was absolutely exemplary.
I had a fairly sterling career, but I stepped down from very celestial levels of intelligence to take the job of operations and training officer in the remote viewing unit because it was, to me, the most significant and the best intelligence collection tool that I had. And so I stepped down as a targeting officer, an engineer of intelligence operations, to being a participant in just one of the many aspects of intelligence. But this one was a very unique one. And what we did was to use this tool to locate terrorists, hostages, to accurately describe not only the locations, but the mind states and the health states of both the terrorists and the hostages. We located downed aircraft in various wars and any number of things in support of not only intelligence operations, but in support of regular military operations, both tactical and strategic.
Delineate, if you would, this will make it easy for everybody. What's the difference between what a psychic does and what you do?
A psychic is a person who is naturally gifted to the right on a bell curve of natural performance. Psychic is generally not very consistent in their data. The very, very good psychics, and there are only a handful in the United States, can really describe a target, a person, place, a thing, or an event very well sometimes. And the problem is both the psychic and the information that the people who are acquiring the information produced by the psychic do not know when the information is correct and when it is not. The tools that we use and that we did use in the military and applied them when deadly force was used or in cases where life or death situations prevailed is an extremely accurate tool. It can be trusted and depended upon. This tool is used to gain information on a target. And a target, by definition, a simple target, is a person, a place, a thing, or an event. And this is what I have been trained to do and have been doing for 13 years, and this is what my company trains professionals to do now, to solve problems.
All right. And your company, when it undertakes a project, it is not Ed Dames alone who goes into a room and goes into some sort of altered state and comes up with the answers. It is a group of remote viewers who are given random numbers as target information, and in order for a commercial contract to be completed with 100% accuracy, there's a whole group involved, correct?
There are 6 to 8 of team members. I have about 30 individuals that work for the company, and we divide them up into teams depending upon an operation. We usually use 6 to 8 team members, and they work individually, and they work independently. And they are, most of the time, the individuals do not know what the target is when they first start. But remember, these are trained psychics. Technical remote viewers are trained. So after about 20 or 40 minutes of working, they're going to know where they're at. So of when they start out in the blind, so to speak, and that's the term that we use, eventually they're going to know what they're working, whether it's the TWA-800 explosion or a missing person.
All right. It is possible, Ed, to remote view an object or a person or an event in current time, in our present timeline, or in the future or in the past, and obviously it's possible then to remote view the location of what was a person, somebody who is now passed away. Is that correct?
That's correct. What the search terms that we use, and this is very much like searching a database or the Internet, very, very similar. The terms that we use, and words are ideas, concepts are ideas, they have a meaning all their own. We go after patterns of information as they exist in a collective unconscious. So we will look for someone like Philip Taylor Kramer and then we will append that idea. If we just look at a person, we're just remote viewing a person, the viewer can come in onto that person's life at any time. But if conscious attention and unconscious attention is directed toward qualifying that term, for instance, present location, then we're going to go to the person's present location. If that person is deceased, we'll go to a gravesite. And in the case of things like Jimmy Hoffa, where we think that we're dealing with an acid bath, or there is no site at all, we simply get the bottom of a pond or something like that. But we know that that's the location because of the way that we're trained and the consistency of the data.
All right. When you undertook the job of looking for Philip Taylor Kramer, what assets did you apply to the task?
Our assets are our tools. Our tools are our remote viewers, our trained remote viewers.
I guess I'm asking, how much of a project was it?
Well, it's ongoing. What we do first is ascertain whether or not the target is dead or alive. That's the first thing we're after. And very quickly, within a matter of 20 minutes on the part of each viewer, we were able to determine that the target's deceased, that Ms. Kramer's brother is dead.
All right. I take it then the details beyond that get significantly more difficult because you're looking and trying to identify a physical area.
Some of the details are not that difficult, but the locational data, if we're dealing with a homogeneous area, yes, it can be quite difficult. That was the case when we did work for the FBI and the Unabomber. There's another set of individuals that are involved in the Unabomber cases, as I've mentioned, and locating them in a city in the Midwest was very difficult because there's very many cities that are homogeneous in nature. They all look and feel the same, and it took a matter of a few weeks to locate the other individuals. It's the same with the Kramer case. We're dealing with a site, a burial site, and now we are dealing with a murder. So it's
Was this the Taylor case more or less difficult than other missing persons that you've had to go look for or have gone look for?
It's about the same.
About the same.
The grave site is...
All right, hold that information, Ed. We're at the bottom of the hour, and when I come back, I want to bring you both on the line, all right?
Okay.
All right, stay right there. So that is a brief description, which I felt necessary for the newbies out there, of what remote viewing is. It was a project ongoing in the military services for 20 years with taxpayer dollars. There was a Nightline program devoted to remote viewing when the news broke that the government had been doing it. So when we come back, Kathy Kramer and Ed Dames, and whatever information Ed Dames has, Kathy's about to get, and I'll give her the opportunity to ask questions. And as much as I can, just stay out of the picture. So that's what's coming up. That's the setup for it, and we'll move on from there.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from March 6, 1997. You're listening to Art Bell Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from March 6, 1997.
A little set and setting for you. Iron Butterfly in a Gotta Beat 'Em. Well, all right, here we go. As promised, once again, here is Kathy Kramer. Kathy?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, okay. I want to give you an opportunity to listen and then ask Ed Dames whatever you would like to ask him. So,
okay, thank you.
Here it comes. Here he comes, actually. Ed?
Okay. Hi.
Okay, you're both on the air and go right ahead.
Ms. Kramer, do you know anything about SciTech at all?
Well, I've done a bit of reading, but I'm in the learning stage right now.
And I've been informed that the other remote viewers have passed information to you, other so-called remote viewers. Is that correct?
Yes, there was Len Buchanan is in the process now of also doing some research.
And in his research, has he come up with any data?
Well, what I have is just we had some information about a lake, but he's still I still have to wait for the final, I guess you'd say, final analysis from him.
Mm-hmm. Well, you won't get it. Lynn Buchanan worked for me, and he was my database manager at the unit, my military unit, and he was not a remote viewer. In fact, I attempted to train him per his request, but he did not complete the training course because he did not have the discipline to do that. And for him to say that he was a remote viewer is tantamount to saying that for, let's say, an aircraft mechanic on a flight line, saying that he's a pilot. So they may be able to taxi the plane up and down the runway, but they can't take it off, and they can't find their way back again, too. So what I'm saying is that he does not possess the expertise, nor does anyone in the world outside of SciTech, to use psychically derived data and guarantee the results. You know, so this is the kind of company that we are. And we do guarantee our results. So that when we say not only is your brother dead, not only is he the victim of a homicide, and not only is he buried in the state of Montana, but we're going to provide information about, we're going to reconstruct the event. And,
yeah, that was,
mm-hmm.
So that can be done as well?
That can be done. I was the operations and the training officer for that military team, and this is what we did in the military using your tax dollars, and it was a very classified unit, but very effective. And I took that expertise and founded SciTech in 1989. This is the kind of work we've been doing in the technology sector commercially since then.
Ed, can you tell us anything about the manner of the murder?
Philip Taylor Kramer was murdered in his own vehicle. He was shot. There were two or three other individuals in the van at the time, and it appears that he was shot within the environs of Los Angeles, and his body was transported to Montana in his own van.
So it was the people that he knew?
He knew the people. They were not strangers. I have other information, but we shouldn't discuss them on the radio because now that this appears to be the basis for a criminal investigation, we should be starting out with the Ventura County Sheriff Department and work our way up to Montana.
Uh-huh.
So we have some details, and they're very specific. And they're very important details that can help solve what is now a murder case.
When you say details, without giving us the details, details of what aspects, Ed?
Details of the relationship of the individuals to Mr. Kramer and why the relationship and why he might have allowed them in his auto.
Uh-huh.
There was a prior relationship.
And did you... do you think it was from the technology or?
No.
No?
No, it was not, it does not appear to have anything to do with technology. As I say, I don't want to get into too many details because, we may, blow the investigation. We're still going to find your brother's body, but we want law enfororcement, authorities to bring the murderers, to justice, and I will jeopardize the case if we talk about specifics.
Yeah, if we talk about motivation, that would begin to identify,
and
certainly.
And there are some other things, too, that may be embarrassing to the family, and I don't want to go into those on the radio.
Okay, I can accept that. You mentioned something to me, Ed, about the location of the body. That it is, you thought, or you think it is near a body of water?
It's not that we think. We know that it's next to, and I hope that the murderers are listening right now. It's next to a small river, a forested area, a small river in Montana. And if they go back and attempt to retrieve the body, I don't think anyone would do that in the state that it's in right now. We know that it's very decomposed because the river has risen periodically and flooded the area where the body is. They did bury the body, and the body's badly decomposed. But if they did attempt to retrieve it, we'd be surveilling it using the techniques that we have, and that would give us a much easier access to the murderers.
Okay.
Do you have a feeling, are you aware of the 911 call that my brother made?
I'm aware of the information. It's important for you to understand that when my company prosecutes or executes a mission like this, we go into the problem with no preconceived notions whatsoever.
Right, I understand.
So
that.
Although we may have ideas ourselves, for instance, I really believe that TWA 800 was subject to a bomb attack, but when we remote viewed it, it was a broken piece of the aircraft. When we go into a problem like this, I actually thought, just intuitively, that your brother may have been just taken off and went into hiding somewhere, as people do occasionally.
Yep.
But I was quite wrong. The 20 minutes into the session, I realized I was dealing with a deceased person. But did you have other questions right now?
Well, I just wondered what he was trying to say. I mean, that was the last words that we've had.
I think he knew he was going to be killed.
Yeah, that might make sense. If you reflect back on what he said, Kathy, that could apply to a suicide or somebody who knew he was going to die, period.
Your brother was in trouble. And I don't want to go much deeper than that, but
okay.
he got himself into a situation, and it cost him his life.
Does this any of this ring as possible to you, Kathy?
It's just hearing these things never. I mean, it has. I don't know how to answer that.
In other words,
No matter what I hear, it always hits me emotionally.
I understand. Let me ask you this way, Kathy. Without. You know, Ed said there were some other things involved that would be better not talked about on the radio. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, if we're going to catch, you know, that's one of the things. You know, I want to know if someone did this to my brother, I want to know, and I want them, as Major Dane said, I want them brought to justice.
Of course, what I meant was involvements with other people without being specific, because obviously that would lead to alerting
people. Business involvements, you know, different things.
Yeah, that kind of thing.
That is the kind of thing I mean, as well as others, and that I don't want to go into. But very, very pertinent to solving the case. There's something that's also important that I need to make clear to you, Ms. Kramer. I know that you believe that your brother should have been subject to an all-points bulletin by virtue of the work he was doing. I used to hire people like your brother. I employed them in technology operations. So let me explain to you why, if you desire, why your brother was not, why the FBI and other agencies were not hot on the trail of your brother when he turned up missing.
Mm-hmm.
It's because of his clearance levels. He did not have a high enough clearance. Although he was involved in an extremely important science to the military-industrial community, the community that I used to belong to, very important science, he was not privy to how that science was applied at the technology levels in a program. He might have deduced how his science was engineered into certain technologies, but he was never privy to the actual weapon systems, which are very, very secret. And your brother did not have access to that. If he did, within 24 hours, the FBI would have been looking for him as well as other agencies. And that's the reason that they did not pursue him more forcefully.
Does that make sense, Kathy?
In a logical way, it does. But the last, each response we get from them, they change their story. And my brother, I don't know. See, I don't know. There's so many ways that this can go. That's one of the things that's so tormenting about it, because of my brother's involvement in different things, because of the reference to O.J. Simpson and the 911 call, because of being in Iron Butterfly, because of the number of business involvements that he had, and because of his behavior the last few weeks before he disappeared. Was it mental illness? It's enough to drive you crazy. And so, what you're saying, it's a curious thing to me that the level of clearance that he had is irrelevant. I worked over right near LAX, and you could go to lounges over there and hear people talking about this stuff.
Well, let's get back to the basics. The basics are that your brother was involved in a relationship. He knew the people that were in the van with him, and one of those people pulled the trigger on him in his own car, transported the body to Montana. That is my company stands by. We have other information, but the information will have to pass to you and law enforcement officials privately.
All right, Ed, how should the chronology of that go? In other words, should you speak first with law enforcement or concurrently with Kathy? And law enforcement concurrently?
Concurrent.
When will your company or you be ready to do that?
We have some information that we could pass to Kathy post-haste. We'd like to get an investigation going. There's information that would be that could start this rolling, and I think we'll start with Ventura County or something like that. But it's Kathy's call. It's Kathy's call what to do with the information and whether or not to pursue it and whether or not to trust SciTech, those kinds of things.
Kathy?
Yeah, I would like to know more of the details, because this is one of the very possible scenarios, and it just I have some ideas on this as well.
Well, you should never tell us your ideas, because that's your control. That's a control, and by control I mean a control in an experiment. It's a way for you to know, to test the credibility, the veracity and the credibility of SciTech's information. Don't tell us what you know. We'll tell you what we know.
Exactly. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
You know, my ideas and or my thoughts, I guess you could say, and then what you have, and how much fits.
All right, then let's do this, Kathy.
Uh-huh.
With Ed's permission, tomorrow or so, I will give you a number for Ed.
Okay.
And we'll get the two of you together, and you can proceed from that point. Does that sound like the way to go?
Yes, that sounds fine with me.
Ed?
That's perfectly logical.
All right. Then, Kathy, I think that as far as, you know, the public end of this goes, we've said as much as we should say. Do you agree?
Yeah. I have so many questions. It's hard for me to.
Yeah, but I think they ought to come in private.
Yeah, privately.
In private. Uh-huh. All right? Kathy, thank you.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you, Kathy. And Ed, stand by just a second. We'll be right back to you. And I'm sure the audience understands that to go further into the specific details than we just did would be to endanger any investigative result that might come from this. So we gave you absolutely as much as we could or should give you. We've got lots of other business to do with Major Ed Dames, so we'll get to that shortly. it has become tiresome reporting to you the horrendous, the horrible weather across America. You know what's going on with the Ohio River. Thousands are getting their first look at flood damage in Kentucky, where 24 counties have been declared disaster areas. The National Guard is on the way into Sandbag. Louisville lies in the path of the rising waters next. 5 dead in Ohio, 16 counties in Ohio declared disaster areas. More rain coming to compound the situation this weekend. And then some news on CNN this last night that I found somewhat jarring in view of Ed Dame's past predictions. The northeast part of the country, not generally subject to high winds, had 70-mile-per-hour plus winds in parts of Massachusetts and 60-miles-per-hour plus in New York City. New York City! That's incredible. 200 trees down. The winds along the west coast of America, particularly the northwest, have been astounding and awful this year, with local weathermen and national at times suggesting that indeed the jet stream seems to be either coming down on deck or getting very close to the ground, producing these freak and extremely strong winds. Ed, we've only got a moment or two before the top of the hour, but there is no question about, in my mind, in what's going on with our weather. It's changing, and not for the better, and it is quickening. Any comments?
No, same old stuff. The weather's first. The ecology, the ecological collapse will precede an economic collapse. And having said all that, food is still going to be the problem. I want to talk about food and survival tonight.
Oh, we will indeed do that. But you expect, we watch the weather, after all, on a daily basis. And you would say you would not be surprised if we just continually, the next hurricane season is a little worse and so forth and so on.
I don't think there's going to be seasons anymore, Art. I think that this is not epiphenomena. The seasons, the idea of seasons is going to be gone for quite a while. We're no longer going to see seasons as we've seen them before.
Wow. All right. When we come back, Ed, I had an opportunity. I take it that you have said goodbye to the UFO community. Is that you did what you called your swan song? And I watched, by the way, Ed, I watched all 2 hours of it.
Oh, my goodness. That was my goodbye to my homies, UFO community here in Los Angeles. I've been an invited speaker at National Forum, but I decided to say goodbye here in Los Angeles to the UFO community.
Why?
I think that MUFON particularly has accomplished its goals. In fact, it accomplished its goals years ago. It's turned from an objective investigative field reporting agency to a group of conspiracy theorists who have lost their ability to reason, I think, in my mind. And I wanted to close up some loose ends. I've been purported to have said a number of different things over the years, and I wanted to give this representative slice of the MUFONers a chance to ask me some questions so that I might clear my good name. And
they did, and I'll tell you, Ed, as you know, and I certainly know, rumors spread very quickly, get distorted beyond what they began as, and they've had me dead and a member of the Trilateral Commission, and so I know exactly what you've suffered, Ed. Relax, we've got the news coming up, and we'll be right back. Ed Dames, Major Ed Dames, SciTech Ed Dames is my guest. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from March 6th, 1997. Radio Networks presents Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight's program originally aired March 6, 1997.
That's exactly what it is. Good morning, everybody. I'm Art Bell. My guest is Major Ed Dames. In the last hour, with Kathy Kramer, we covered what public information can be covered, and it's going to go to the appropriate law enforcement agencies and Kathy Kramer privately beyond this. We're now going to enter some different areas in a moment. All right, back now to Ed Dames. Ed, you're there, I presume?
I'm here.
All right, I want to read you something, Ed, and what I want to do is, if I can, get rid of the tough stuff first and then move on to, I know you've got, and the audience should know, you've got some good news tonight, correct?
For a change, I have some good news.
For a change, some good news. All right, and we will get to that, but first, I have been in communication with, or received, I guess, a communication from, James Randi. James Randi. So let me read that, and then let me get your response and add my comments. From James Randi, Art, I understand that Ed Dames made some false statements about me and my challenge on his last appearance with you. I have informed him via email, and I hope you will confront him with this the next time he is on your show. This is the message I sent to my list with a copy to Dames. I've been informed that on the Art Bell Show, remote viewer Ed Dames claims that he has taken me up on my $1,094,000 challenge, but that I backed out for some reason. If Dames did indeed say that, he lied. He also said, I'm told, that he thought that my financial backers would not put up money against him for fear of losing. If he said this, he was, to my surprise, both wrong and misinformed. I have no backers who approve or disapprove my decisions. I have a board of directors, and the board has given me the authority to make the challenge without prior approval. I have not the slightest fear that Ed Dames will take the prize. If he were to really apply for it, he'd find that to be so, but he has never contacted me. I've never heard that he has any interest in doing so. If these reports of what Dames said are true, he will be aping the others, unnamed, who choose to avoid confrontation with reality by saying the JREF is afraid to test them, or that we tested them and they won but were not paid. Nonsense. Such an event has never occurred. Ed Dames, do you wish to accept the challenge of the JREF as stated clearly at http://www.randi.org. So there is, and I should add, before you respond, Ed, after I got this, I called James Randi and spoke with him. I said, James, if you feel this strongly about it, why not come on the air and confront Ed Dames in person, and he declined to do so and requested that I read this to you. So he didn't want to come on the air. That's what he says, Ed, and if you want to respond, you may.
I'd love to respond. In fact, I've been trying to get a hold of Mr. Amazing Randi for quite a while since individuals associated with his august organization have emailed me very politely over the year, last year, and said, why don't you do this to show how effective TRV works? And our company felt that that was a good idea to build up the credibility in the public's eyes of how effective we are.
Plus,
and
it
would also be a lot of fun, too.
And a lot of money. It's a lot of money.
Well, yeah, it's a lot of money. But, I mean, you know, very frankly, we could turn this into a media event and make as much money off of the media as we could, you know, relieving Mr. Randi of his mill. So it's not just the money. It's proving this is a very, very important technology. If SciTech fails and technical remote viewing is found to be ineffective, we've set back our cause probably another 100 years, and we don't have 100 years left. So we do it for the fun and for the validation. So I would love to talk with Mr. Randi. Can you call him up right now and we'll talk with him?
Well,
Does he want to do that?
No, he doesn't want to do that, Ed. He's in Florida.
Well, his challenge is to prove the existence of any paranormal phenomenon. And, of course, he busted Uri Geller. Uri Geller did not have the psychokinetic effect on call. And evidently, James Randi says he caught him fudging on an experiment. Well, we don't fudge. We were professionals in the military, and we're professionals now in the corporate world. And frankly, James Randi is going to meet his Waterloo if he gets his act together and tells and we coordinate our activities. And this radio program would be a good forum to do that. Let's agree in the front of all of your listeners exactly what we're going to do for this challenge, and then allow your listeners and any other scientific board that is not associated with either SciTech or Mr. Randi's organization adjudicate and decide the outcome.
All right, let me go further, Ed, and I don't think this is a good idea. He sent a follow-up email to me.
Oh, by the way, we had representatives of our company call Mr. Randi, and when our name was mentioned, SciTech was mentioned, Mr. Randi hung the phone up.
He's
a difficult man to get a hold of in person.
All right. James Randi has a series of numbers that he sent me in a email that he claims is in his safe. And I am not comfortable with this as a challenge, and so I'm not even going to present it to you because, number one, it's his safe. He's in control of these numbers, and I don't think that would be an objective test. So, if you're willing to meet him head on, I will again contact James Randi, and if necessary, on the air, we will come up with mutually agreeable terms for a test.
Perfect.
Because I don't think this would be I wouldn't even like it.
No, that's perfect. Your suggestion is perfect. Because
All right. We'll do exactly that. I wanted to handle the question of James, and you know, he's hot out there saying why you're lying and all the rest of it, and so I think it's
well. Everybody has to meet their Waterloo, and I think Mr. Randi is coming.
Well, 1,094,000, that's not bad anyway, under any circumstances. All right, on to one other thing. One of the, during this this videotape that I got to see, there were a whole bunch of questions, really good ones, generated, I thought. Some of them spewed forth in a not very friendly way, I must say, but nevertheless, good questions. And one that you can settle for us right now is the following. Ed, where is the verifiable evidence that SciTech can predict future geophysical events with 100% accuracy, or even 20% accuracy for that matter? You've never provided us any verifiable evidence of your interviews on Coast to Coast. In other words, a lot of people have screamed, give us something, an earthquake, a something or another, in the not-too-distant future that, you know, that will help establish your credibility in that area. So you can answer that any way you want.
Let me start with a little one, a tiny one. I mentioned several of your shows ago that I've done that anything in the developmental stages that are in shallow water, particularly eggs, fish eggs, frog eggs, and things like that,
that's right,
are mutating and dying, in fact, dying off, because of increased ultraviolet levels.
Bugs, fish, frogs, you're exactly right.
Mostly frogs and things that are a lot of sessile things. Insects are much more viable, and we can get to those later.
All right.
But particularly fish and amphibians. And I think that it was only last week that a scientific community announced that sea urchin embryos were dying in Antarctica due to increased ozone.
Uh-huh.
So that's a little thing. And remember that intelligence, and this was technical remote viewing, was developed, I developed it as an intelligence collection tool. Intelligence has to be predictive to be useful. So that's what we do commercially. We predict. Now, on the very big things, I mentioned the jet stream dropping.
Yes.
But on the very big things, like this little special delivery package that is associated with Hale Bopp and that will eventuate in the formation and or the delivery of a plant pathogen, something that will kill plants very quickly.
We better run over this a little more carefully. This is too big.
Okay,
there are new listeners.
Let me reiterate then.
Hale Bopp, the comet, is, as we all know now, quite visible in the sky. On my last program, Ed said there was a cylinder with some sort of, how did you put it, Ed, brown gook or...
It was not necessarily a cylinder. It's a cylindrical area something that was embedded into the comet and that detached and is no longer associated with the comet and is heading towards Earth.
In other words, it has already broken away from the comet.
That's correct. And
she's on the way.
That's correct.
This object will, in effect, burn up or disintegrate in the atmosphere, but not so totally, that it will not deliver to the Earth a plant pathogen, which will begin killing all green things, starting in Africa and spreading. Is that about correct?
That's correct. Spreading rapidly.
All right.
Now, luckily, yes, that's the kind of thing that's bigger than an earthquake. And by the way, we can do earthquakes in geophysical events. We really can.
And okay, but let me stop you and ask you.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody pounds on me, and I know on you on the websites and all the rest of it, for timelines. What is your best guess with regard to when we will begin to observe the first effects in Africa?
We know that we're facing the beginning of a global economic collapse because of disease, not just plant diseases, in summer of next year. So we expect to see dying plants by this time summer.
Summer of 98.
Yes, but we could possibly see pick up the entry. It might look like a bolloid. The entry of this. Let's call it a device, into Earth's atmosphere over Africa. It will be probably an anomaly.
But it'll probably be reported as a meteorite or a small asteroid or something of that sort, I would imagine.
I would expect. And, I'm really not the company, although it stands by the data. We really don't expect this kind of sci-fi prediction to be believable or believed by much of anyone. But what we want to do is to put the information on the street, say that we stand by it, so when these effects occur, then we can, the additional information, subsequent information, modifying information that we can put out, will then be, the credibility level will be higher, and we'll be able to provide survival information for people.
Well, it's a hell of a way to have to establish credibility.
We can do it in a minor way, too, by finding missing people and reconstructing murder events, predicting the death of embryos, the dropping of the jet stream.
Mm.
It builds up.
All right. I thought there were two good questions asked in the videotape, and so I will re-ask them here. One is, somebody said the pathogen business... Is it possible that it will occur or is occurring in some other timeline, that you're looking, what you're looking at and getting regarding the pathogen will occur on, you know, in some other dimension, some other alternative Earth or time?
What we're talking about, I understand the question. But as a simple man, I'm telling you that this is the kind of, this, in terms of a military operation or a commercial operation, this is right around our corner, not another corner. This is going to happen. We will see it with our eyes, that it is not a moving target in terms of what we're looking at in our future. No, we're not talking about another timeline, unfortunately. We're talking about our timeline, the one that we're on.
We're talking about the summer of 98, and we're not talking about a maybe. We're talking about a commercial-sized investigation targeting of this that you have done, so it is not a 70% probability, as far as you're concerned, it's an eventuality.
We're facing in the summer of 98 the beginning of a global economic collapse, not caused by war or other things, but by disease.
And to be fair, not only what's produced by the plant pathogen, but a lot of other disease. Can you be any more specific beyond the pathogen part?
Microbial attack by virtue of many people dying, and because the immune systems are suppressed when people starve, these pathogens are killing plants. And I will have some positive survival-related information later, but because so many people will be dying, you have microbes having a field day, and things like Ebola in Africa or tuberculosis in the cooler climates will begin to spread like wildfire, as well as this plant pathogen. So we'll be attacked on all fronts, but all microbial fronts.
Another very good question, I thought, connected with this. If all of this begins to occur with Africa and then the rest of the world, the question would be, will seeds survive? That's a very good question, because if we are ultimately to survive, some of us, we will eventually need plants, and for that you need seeds. So it's a good question.
Seeds will survive as long as in the next several years they're protected from the environment, because what we're seeing are something like spores that are airborne. These plant pathogens produce something like, let's call it a spore. This is an airborne problem. And so if you're raising something from seeds, no matter how many seeds you have, it'll still be decimated by this pathogen. And we're still going to be stricken with these weather problems that will not allow us to grow food the way that we traditionally grow food crops. So that you have that problem, and a degrading atmosphere that's allowing increased levels of ozone. So, the ecology essentially is collapsing around us.
How quickly will the weather continue to deteriorate? Because, I mean, we're already talking about events that are producing hundreds of millions of dollars of damage, lost lives, entire areas, thousands of people without homes, that kind of thing. That's with us now. That's not a prediction. Well, it was. It is today's reality. The question is, how much faster is it going to begin to... How much worse is it going to get, Ed?
It's going to get quite bad. And a good index of how bad it is and how quickly it is becoming worse is food crops. Start taking a look at food crops and expect some shortages and very high prices in food very quickly. Crops simply, as I mentioned so often before, crops simply cannot be raised in the same fashion that we've raised them in the last 100 years.
So there will be new ways. All right, Ed, hold on. We'll be right back with you. My guest is Major Ed Dames, SciTech's Ed Dames. If you want to know more, go to my website and jump over to his, www.artbell.com, right now.
You're listening to Art Bell Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from March 6th, 1997. listening to Art Bell Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from March 6, 1997.
I've got a rather interesting facts and story to tell you all about in just a moment. Good morning, everybody. I'm Art Bell. My guest is Major Ed Dames, SciTech's Ed Dames. And again, if you want a more detailed look at what SciTech's all about, go to my website, jump to his, take a look, do some reading. It's www.artbell.com. www.artbell.com. All right, I'm going to lay this down as an example of what occurs with Major Ed Dames. He, of course, because of what he says, has his critics, some of them not fully witted, in my opinion. I got a series of faxes over the last hour from some fellow named Charlie in Houston. And one of Charlie's faxes reads as follows. Art! Ha! Funny! Why are you not confronting, quote, Major Head Games, end quote, with straight-on questions? Don't give him a break. Ask him to answer a question that he must answer on the spot. He can spout off all sorts of bovine defecation delayed by several months, which is why he's getting out of the business. He can't answer a straight-on question. He can't give you a definitive answer. He's not called Major Head Games for nothing. And so I thought, okay. And during the break, I picked up the telephone, and I called Charlie in Houston.
Oh, this is Art Bell.
Yes, it is. Charlie, would you care to put your mouth where your faxes are? Would you like to confront Ed in person? I'm calling you personally to give you this opportunity. Long pause. Charlie thinks, apparently as best Charlie can. Charlie finally says no. He said, are we on the air? I said, no, Charlie. He's worried we're on the air already. Of course, I don't put people on the air without telling them they're on the air. So, no, we're in a break. I said, do you want to go on the air and confront him in person? These are pretty accusatory faxes. Why not come and talk to Ed? Well, no, I don't have the armament for that. I don't want to do that. Typical. Very, very typical. I just thought I'd pass that along to you. That occurred during the break. And your critics are very vocal and actually vicious a lot of times. But including James Randi, so far, they don't want to come on here and talk to you, Ed.
We're going to end run the James Randis and mainstream science. And the way we're doing that is we're putting fire in the hands of everybody who wants it. I mentioned on an earlier show that we were in development on a training program, a tape training program for years.
That's right. That's another. Okay, here we go again. Let me stop you. You have a tape. You're doing something that I'm amazed at. I know that your training sessions have been full and are full through 1998 or something.
We're not training past September of 97, and those slots are filled.
Yep.
Mostly with doctors, physicians.
Yep. So you put together videotapes that are going to allow people to learn to remote view on their own for a far more reasonable price, far more reasonable. And now people are coming and saying, aha! You see, before they couldn't say anything. Now they're saying, aha, Ed Dames is now on the money thing. He wants to make a lot of money. And so here come the videotapes. What was your motivation in releasing the videotapes?
Retirement. Retirement, so I do not have to teach this anymore. And we were inundated when SciTech was a very low-profile company until we did the Art Bell Show. when people found out that we had a training course, we had thousands of people haranguing us for this training. And they did not know that we had training courses, tape versions, home study courses in development, and we had been working on that for years. But this one person cannot, and a small company that is capacity constrained, really, how can we teach all of these people something that I would have given anything to learn and was lucky enough to do that, to be employed in that capacity? So these tapes, they do two things. They prove to people that this is real, because the only way that people like Charlie in Houston are going to believe this is when they do it themselves. No amount of amazing Randy successes or those kinds of successes or finding Philip Taylor Kramer's body is going to convince the Charleses in Houston that this is right. There'll always be a hitch.
Sure.
There'll always be something. So by putting this in people's hands, they'll be able to do this themselves and to do things like penetrate facilities in Area 51 and then share their results on the Internet within 45 minutes to 2 hours after they work. And you're talking about a world without secrets.
Yeah, that is what we're talking about. And again, getting to specifics, would you please give the audience the results of the work you did on TWA 800?
Well, that work is posted on our website, and in actually, in summary, in two letters that went to the vice chairman of the National Transportation Safety Board. And in essence, we very quickly determined as a team that a piece of the aircraft failed. It was a mechanical failure, a very rare failure indeed. In fact, about as rare as the crankshaft in your automobile braking. But we're talking about a 747 Series 100 that was built in 1971. So it was a rather old aircraft.
Mm-hmm.
And the part that failed was in System 3, and that's the right inboard engine.
Yes, sir.
And up above the engine in the pylon is a pump, a hydraulic pump, not a fuel pump. And it is that pump shaft that broke and fractured and caused an ensuing chain of events. And we laid that out on our website point by point. The shaft fractured the pump housing. The shrapnel from that event severed a fuel line, and a fuel-air mist was created, which exploded. That explosion ignited the right wing tank, severing the right wing from the aircraft. The fireball migrated, the explosion, the conflagration actually migrated to the almost empty center tank, and then the plane was entirely consumed. So there were two very large explosions. One was the right wing tank, and the second was the main tank. And that is the order of events, and you know that it's not that difficult for our team to do. Had the plane actually been subject to bombing, as was the case with the Lockerbie Pan Am flight.
Right.
You remember that.
Of course.
Our military team determined that two individuals were responsible for placing a bomb on board the aircraft. That was a very difficult operation because we had to track down using, in those days, it was called coordinate remote viewing. Now, in its evolved form, SITEC's technical remote viewing is far faster and more efficient. We had to track down the terrorist, and walk the FBI into their locations, and that was a lot of work.
When did you first make public the results of the TWA investigation?
I think about October 15th sticks in my name. I'd have to go to sticks in my mind. I have to go to the website to check.
Okay.
But there, as you know, they're still putting Humpty Dumpty back together again,
right,
in a warehouse. And it's that kind. We think that they'll do that. The NTSB has requested an additional $17 million from Congress, which I think they got. And they're going to put the aircraft back together again. And I'm sure the results will reflect our own results.
So you believe there will be some sort of relatively definitive answer from the NTSB about what actually did occur?
Yes, I do, because the NTSB is not a political animal like, say, the FBI or NASA or agencies like that.
Mm-hmm.
NTSB has one job to do, is to make sure that whatever broke on that aircraft, if it indeed broke, does not happen again on other aircraft to
All
protect
right.
lives.
Also, on the videotape I watched, you related a story of SciTech work on a medical case, specifically a spinal problem. Can you tell us about that?
One of our graduates, a neurosurgeon, asked me personally to remote view an intractable case that he had.
He couldn't figure it out.
He couldn't figure it out. He thought he had it, but he didn't. And I came up with a conclusion that there was a leak of spinal fluid lower in the back, And he thought that, that was probably not correct. That isn't what he thought what the problem was. And the next morning, the individual was who had the problem was under the knife in the emergency room, and it was the specific problem that I had objectified using technical remote viewing the day before. So you can see how fast and how powerful these tools are. And that was one person, albeit a professional, myself, working one remote viewing session. So when you have a team of professional viewers or experienced graduate students, you can imagine what we can do.
I can imagine what you can do, and I want to ask you this, and I don't want a blurted out answer, Ed. I'm telling you I don't want a blurted out answer. We know that somebody, we know that Courtney Brown rendered up to myself and to Whitley Strieber a photograph that was fraudulent. And I am not here saying, so I'm clear, that Courtney Brown committed a fraud. I'm saying that he gave us a photograph that obviously has been shown to be a fraud. And I asked you during the last show we did if it would be possible to remote view who committed that fraud. Do not tell me over the air who it is. There are legal problems with that. But do tell me, do you know?
No, I don't. In fact, we're working, as you know, some serious survival issues.
And, I know.
And those plus the what we did volunteer to do was the Kramer case.
Right.
That's
right. And you said this would be somewhere down line. And,
yes.
And so that's exactly
mm-hmm.
correct, I recall.
And we haven't actually slipped this in to see who it is. I think it would be fun, but there's a lot of things that are fun, and we'll try our best to get that one in. I know.
I can understand the priority is not so high as the rather immediate fate of the world by quite a long shot. All right, this is out of left field, Ed, and it's just a suggestion. I don't know whether it's even worth doing, but. Over the last couple of weeks, we have been inundated with news of cloning. Not in vitro fertilization, but cloning. Most recently, of monkeys. Now, that's very close to human beings, within less than a percentage point difference in the DNA. And so, you know, it's quite clear to a lot of people, the cloning of human beings is either already been done or immediately on the horizon. It would be fun, using your words, to know where cloning is going to go, if anywhere at all. Is that an interesting target?
I think that this is falls under the rubric of a topical search. It's where we actually go in with a very general search term. Look in the collective unconscious and see what the near-term, mid-term, and far-term holds in terms of those kinds of ideas. I'm not saying technologies, ideas. It would be fun, but I don't think we're going to have a chance to do much cloning at all. I will tell you in a little while where genetic engineering and biotechnology can best be applied. By the way, that medical session is on our website, in case anyone's interested.
So they can read about that as well.
Yes.
All right. If you make enough money from these tapes to retire and to go to a safe spot, which, by the way, I think is the one you won't name. We'll talk about that here in a bit. That is the unabashed, truthful goal of what you're doing. In other words,
that's not the goal. Is I can retire now, but we can't really do it responsibly until we're sure that everything that we know is in the hands of everyone out there. And then we expect them to share results on the internet very quickly. And I think this will spread like wildfire. Even I don't know what the next step in the evolution of this very powerful consciousness tool is. But I think that young people will take this faster and farther than I could even have imagined. Have a lot of time.
I understand. What do you anticipate the results will be, or can it not be anticipated, of so many people suddenly being able to do what you're able to do? Is there any consequence to that, Ed?
again, I think it's quite mind-boggling, even for someone like myself who's used to mind-boggled things. And my guess is that what we've seen on the web is that young people really really learn very fast. And what we'll probably see is, let's say there is an event somewhere worldwide or an enigma. People who are trained in the home study course and who learn these techniques will quickly share the results of their remote viewing sessions, which take about 45 minutes to do. And in a matter of hours, there will be very accurate information on what appeared to be a mystery earlier will be on the net. And people will be cross-checking each other's work very rapidly, so there won't be any mysteries or secrets anymore. The world will be very, very, very different.
All right. You're not adverse to the money you're going to be making from this, right?
It's what a corporation's all about. And once we market advanced modules, then our internet site, I'll be on the internet site providing technical support to the advanced modules, people who want scientists, engineers, people who use these in their these techniques in their actual disciplines, particularly in a university atmosphere. But, of course, a business is not adverse to that. And we spent 13 years developing them, so...
I just want to lay this out, because your traditional course for people to come to SciTech and to go through the course with you would have cost, in the past, how much?
The tuition is $4,500.
$4,500. Mm-hmm. All right, and that is not far-off course from other remote viewing facilities around the country. They're all very expensive from the average person's point of view.
Well, they followed SciTech's lead. I founded the company in '89, and they kind of we set the standard for us for tuitions. But you're not going to really learn how to be a technical remote viewer. What we teach is for someone to do it on their own.
Right.
And these other courses turn it into an experience, or you have to go back and work with one of their facilitators in order to produce something. Our course is designed to have individuals learn this and do it successfully on their own, including James Randi, if you'd like to learn.
I wouldn't hold your breath on that one. All right, and by the way, we will indeed contact Randy and see if he wants to come on the air. I'll make a second plea. First time around, he didn't want to come on the air and talk to you at all. So we will break here and be back after the top of the hour. My guest is SciTech's Major Ed Dames.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from March 6, 1997. Listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from March 6th, 1997.
All right, in one more moment, back to Ed Dames, and we are going to ask some very specific questions about timeline. All right, back now to Major Ed Dames, SciTech's Ed Dames, and as we go back, let me tell you, if you're just joining us, in the first hour, we had together Kathy Kramer and Major Ed Dames. He gave as many details as he could publicly about what he sees as the murder of Philip Taylor Kramer. And that information was not given brutally on the air. We had spoken with Kathy Kramer, of course, prior to going on the air, and it was her wish to be on the air, and I want you to know that. And I personally informed her of the initial information from Ed Dames a good week prior to the broadcast. Obviously, we're not going to bring somebody on the air and level that kind of brutal information publicly on them. So she already knew most of the serious news, picked up some more of the specifics. It will now continue with the Ventura Police and Sheriff and Kathy Kramer and Ed Dames in private. You will hear about the results when they occur. In the second hour, we've been talking specifically about the plant pathogen that is due to come to a continent here on Earth near you soon. And there is some good news. All hope is not lost. We're going to get good news. Ed has got some good news for us. But we've had so many requests for specific timelines. Let me read this. Art, if I was making an investment, I would want to know how the product works now, not in 1998. Please push Ed to commit to a current timeline. Well, I think that's a little unfair. 1998 is next year. That's pretty current stuff. Otherwise, he goes on, he may just be a con man who makes his money for 1 or 2 years and then disappears. Actually, that is what Ed is doing. Unabashedly, there's nothing wrong. He's got a company. It's called SciTech. It's a private company. It's not .org. In other words, it's not a tax-free organization. Ed has a company. Years and years and years, retired from the military. And he now has a company. It is a regular company, like any other, that makes money. He is providing videotapes that will teach you how to remote view at an intermediate and then eventually a higher level. We'll talk about that as well. And he charges for those videotapes. There is no question about it. And there is no shame in it. And actually, it is several thousands of dollars less than the courses that he otherwise had jam-packed full. So, if you want to look at motivations, yes, he's a company. Yes, he's making money. And yes, in a year or two, he plans to more or less disappear. And for a very good reason, we are discussing that reason this morning. And so let's begin by talking a little bit about timelines, Ed, and how it is you determine when something is going to happen. In remote viewing, how do you do that?
Well, Art, we first target the specific event or the class of event that we're looking at. Let's use the next major L.A. earthquake as an example.
All right.
So this we're setting up a problem, and the problem deals with Los Angeles as a geographical location, and the problem set is further modified with the idea of a geophysical event, in this case an earthquake, not a storm or high winds or hail.
Right.
Now, there are earthquakes happening all the time, as you know. Microquakes occur several thousand times a day.
Sure.
So we have to qualify the search term. Our intent must be, what do we mean by major? And major, we mean loss of life and or destruction of property, heavy destruction of property. Once we qualify those search terms, we write these search terms down on a folder. We simply write the word down, and that's the same thing you would do if you were searching a database. You would go in from the general to the specific.
Actually, if you go to the Internet and, say, go to Yahoo or one of the big search engines and enter a word, it will give you a listing of responses in confidence levels. In other words, 98% says this is your response, and then on down in probability from there. So kind of like that.
In a similar fashion. And remember, the Internet was started by, in the old days, when I was there, it was a Department of Defense tool. So the way that it's set up now very much mirrors its original structure.
Mm-hmm.
You search from the general to the specific.
Right.
And so we're talking L.A. modified by the idea of a major earthquake. And when we begin our remote viewing protocols, the same way that anybody that learns the home study techniques can do, they immediately find themselves in a large built-up area sketching and describing in very structured discipline techniques a city. Now, we know that city is Los Angeles because that's part of the search term. It's directly attributable. And the more people work remote viewing, the more confidence they'll have in this amazing ability for unconscious to go right to what conscious intent dictates. But now they're describing activity in the city, and after about 45 minutes or so, they know that they're dealing with what appears to be rush hour times 10. And they're describing the epicenter of the earthquake, because that's how unconscious perceives this. The earthquake begins at an epicenter. So the remote viewer is actually sketching the San Gabriel Mountains as well as Los Angeles. There must be context for meaning. So that your mind must produce data about the earthquake's epicenter as well as Los Angeles, because that's what all the targeting data is.
Sure.
Okay, so we can, in higher stages, determine where we're at in a ballpark sense in time. We can go out and say, okay, we are about, generally speaking, in an analog sense, this is about 5 months past my next birthday or 5 months past Christmas, anything that has emotional meaning.
Hmm.
And we can actually find it and locate it by using an analog sense of time.
A kind of emotional landmarks.
We bracket the target using landmarks, and the landmarks don't have to be emotional just to us. I could use Art Bell's birthday, even though I don't know when your birthday is, as a landmark, because
sure.
It has emotional meaning somewhere in the collective.
So in other words, the audience needs to understand there is not some magic date that suddenly drifts in front of your eyes. That is not the way it's done.
No. Now, psychics can sometimes, natural psychics will sometimes have that occur to them, but we are not psychics. We're remote viewers. So now we get into how we will pinpoint a specific day and hour. We've got to use a physical reference point because the abstract ideas have no tangible value. It's very, and we don't know where we are in time without referencing to something tangible.
Mm.
So, for instance, the idea of calendrical time, March 8th, 1997, has no meaning in the collective unconscious. So we've got to look at physical reference points. So the best way to do that is to use an orrery. And an orrery is an ancient began as a medieval astrolab. You remember those brass devices that were white clockworks that showed, in a Copernican sense,
yes,
the position of the heavenly bodies.
Yes.
Well, there are modern day components, software, that show the positions of the heavenly bodies on two dimensions on your computer screen.
Sure.
So what we do as remote viewers is, once we lock on to an event and we're not sure where we are in time, we go into a higher stage in an advanced tool, and we sketch the relative positions of planets vis-a-vis our star, the sun.
Oh, fascinating.
And then we go further. We sketch on that particular time when this event is occurring the phase of the moon and its position in the sky, and so on. And by using physical reference points like that, we can extrapolate, we can interpolate the hour and the day.
So you can really, you can refine it. And what a fascinating way to do so. All right. Since we're on the subject of L.A., and you're being heard in L.A., people there are concerned, not overwrought with, but concerned about the possibility of an earthquake. Do you know anything specific?
We just had, yes, we know some specific things, that the next quake will not be as large as the last big one. That's good news. Again, epicenter, San Gabriel Mountains, lots of damage in Malibu. And we do have a ballpark time on the date, but I think I'll wait on that one. I think I'd rather teach our students how to do that on the website.
All right. All right. This may lead us in a direction that I think you want to go in. Let me read this to you. Dear Art, I work for the largest grower, shipper of fresh vegetables, I believe, in the world, Dole Vegetables. Will Mr. Dames and his company be providing companies like mine on how we can make this impending situation any better? It seems that with the resources that companies such as Dole have, that we could help remedy or mitigate the pathogen problem somewhat. That's from Jen in Salinas, California. And it's a good question. All is not doom and gloom. A lot of people are going to die. You said 80%. Do you stand 80-85%? Do you stand by that?
In the lesser developed countries, African continent particularly, yes.
What about this fax? Is there a way that we can mitigate death here? Selfishly, let's ask about good old industrialized U.S. of A.
The death in the lesser developed countries will be primarily microbial and disease. They won't be the plant pathogens directly. It will be disease. But to get back to a subject at hand, we've finally got some extremely valuable, very good news vis-a-vis the food problem. As I've mentioned so often, food is going to become an extremely serious problem.
Yes.
When our plants die and we have no plants to feed first the cattle and then ourselves, there's no food. And having said that, many of our technical remote viewer professionals looking into the future, we're seeing survivors on very barren wastelands, all the crops virtually gone. And we were wondering, what are these people eating? We know they're survivors. There's people moving around on the surface. What are they eating?
Mm-hmm.
And we were perceiving vertically oriented tanks, vats, enclosed. And in those tanks was a greenish-brown substance, mostly green. And we did not know what the substance was, but we knew that people were eating it. We now know exactly what the substance is.
What is it?
It's chlorella, a green algae. Now, some of your listeners may be familiar.
I am not. Chlorella, a green algae.
Chlorella is a species of green algae. And let me tell you that... before I go into the natural history of chlorella and describe to you what it is, it will be the only thing to eat in the out years. It will first become a food supplement. Right now, it's a health food supplement. Mm-hmm. And in the out years, it will become the staple and the only thing that we can eat, because it will be the only thing that survives on the surface of this planet or anywhere else.
Ed, can you tell me how long the out years will last? You are describing what is going to begin in the summer of 1998, which is only next year,
mm-hmm.
the beginning of it. How many years of out are we talking about before things begin to get better?
I don't know. We're running into this wall that I mentioned before. Somewhere in between 1999 and 2001 is this idea of this discontinuity, this event that happens globally, worldwide, all at once. Something very mysterious happens to people, and we're having a difficult time seeing around that art.
You have described this discontinuity as a spiritual event, I believe, haven't you?
It's not just spiritual. There's physical concomitants. Something is happening to the surface of the planet as well. It's spooky. I don't scare easily, but this one is, it spooks even me. And we're still working on it. I would. It's the last real mission that SciTech has commercially.
All right, can you define discontinuity for me, please?
I call it a discontinuity because it's a form of, you say there's a quickening going on. I agree with you that that's an apropos term. But the discontinuity is what is a break in human evolution. It's a point where human evolution does something funny. The discontinuity is a mathematics and catastrophe theory term. It's a point where all of a sudden there's a break in the continuity of evolution for humans. And that the physical description of what that would feel like is somewhere between sleep and death. Something happens to human beings. They jump track. I don't know if all of us do, but we can only put it in terms of biblical or supernatural terms, but there are other things that happen that I don't want to go into now. And this event is somewhere between 1999 and 2001, where everything changes immediately, globally, at once.
And you cannot see past that?
We can't see past it easily. We know that the people are still around, but what happens changes the way we see ourselves. And therefore, as a remote viewer, looking at me through my own eyes is one thing. But trying to look at me, if I'm around, with eyes that are different after this event is another. So,
in other words, it is so different, whatever the hell it is, that there is no good frame of reference for you.
We have to discover the frame of reference first, the bandwidth, if you will. Perhaps where there's a compression of time or an expansion, a dilation of time, that may be the problem. I suspect that it is.
A dilation of time.
That time either speeds up or slows down. And if it does, we don't have in our experiential database, in our thesaurus, this kind of an experience. So we can't, as technical remote viewers, cope with the data. We're not able to put it into useful terms, in terms of words and sketches. What are you seeing? Well, how do you translate something that you've never experienced before, directly or indirectly, into words and sketches?
You can't.
And that's why we're running into this problem.
How hard are you working on it?
Well, not as much as we will be working much harder very fast because we've solved this this food problem. We've identified the food source, and we're very happy about that. So now, promulgate that information and give it to whoever wants it, you know, for free, by the way. There's no newsletter that you have to buy. We're posting on our website, and we provide it to anyone that wants.
I'm sorry, what is the name of that algae again?
It is a green algae. I'll be talking a lot about it. And this particular one is called chlorella.
Chlorella.
It's very important.
I take it that chlorella does not require direct sunlight to grow. The nature of an algae, is that
it accurate? Does require direct sunlight.
It does.
And mineralized water, and it's off and running.
So under the conditions that you foresee, and that would be a far more depleted ozone layer and a lot of other weather problems and so forth and so on, chlorella would grow in these...
It will flourish. Chlorella will flourish. We will not be able to spend a lot of time on the surface while the ozone problems are so severe, because at 15 minutes in that kind of sunlight, you're going to damage your skin.
All right, Ed, hold it right there. Yikes, one of my new favorite words.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from March 6th, 1997. Radio Networks presents Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight's program originally aired March 6, 1997.
All right, shortly we're going to get the lines open. I realize we're dealing with very shocking, controversial material. If it bothers you, turn off the radio. Additionally, if you have questions, you're welcome to ask hard ones, direct ones. Remember, you need not be rude to ask a hard, direct question. So I would hope that my audience would come at Ed hard, but fairly. And we will get back to Ed Dame shortly. All right. Ed, would it be appropriate that we begin putting together facilities to grow chlorella now?
There are commercial companies that grow it now, and they do a good job of it. I think that we just need to familiarize ourselves with it more, and we need to develop technologies that make it available to spread it out more, because distribution logistically is going to be very difficult when the economy breaks down. I've already mentioned, I have mentioned in the past, that it's probably not a good idea to be in the cities.
Yes, and you, this brings up another topic. You're leaving. You're leaving. I mean, you've told people, you're upfront about it, you're leaving. Now,
I'm leaving in 98.
That's right, all right, in 98. In the videotape, in standing in front of the rabid MUFON folks, they pressed you for two safe locations, safe areas. And so I will press you for those. Actually, they pressed you for three. What are the two safe areas that you see, Ed?
Well, I don't know how many safe areas there are, but there's consistent data by that I mean that many, many remote viewers data leads to certain specific places. One of them is in British Columbia, right across the U.S., what is presently the U.S. border, and to the western part of British Columbia.
Vancouver area.
To the west, I'm sorry, to the east more, probably another 100 miles.
A little to the east of Vancouver.
Yeah, right in that area there. And other, a lot of Europeans end up describing the area around Liechtenstein and Switzerland. So
both of these are cold areas, and I presume that bears somewhat on it.
I think that my guess, my hunch before, was that cold areas, for reasons that we talked about, water, fresh water, were important. Why specifically the collective unconscious points viewers to these areas and areas like these, I don't know yet, but I know that these are sanctuaries.
All right.
They're not in large cities.
There is a third sanctuary, but you will not make that public, will you?
No, I won't. It's in the Polynesian Pacific area.
I had a feeling that's where it was, somewhere out there. Mm-hmm. And I have a feeling that's where you're going.
I'm heading that direction.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you've got your cards, as far as I can see, out on the table. And you've been awfully specific tonight.
I do, before the night is over, I really do want to inform people about this food.
Oh, yes. By the way, Ed, I'm a hamburger and steak and potato kind of guy.
Right now?
Right now. And
you're probably going to want to die, Art.
Yeah, that's right. Ed, what is this? Have you taste tested some chlorella?
Yes, I taste tested it, and I don't know how long we can live on this. It's going to need some Tabasco sauce or something. But it's a wonderful, wonderful thing. It's extremely healthy, and it has all the essential amino acids that we require for life. You can live on this stuff, and I'll say more about it. But bland is an understatement.
Bland is an understatement.
Yeah, I mean, it's like Salient Green without the bad component.
I understand. Yuck. There is no way to avoid what's coming, is there?
There is not.
Very clear statement. Somebody writes and wants to know, you will frequently, actually for a long time you didn't comment on other remote viewers, the Courtney Brown situation forced it. There is one other remote viewer somebody would like your comment on, and that's David Morehouse.
David Morehouse was with the remote viewing unit for about a year, a little over a year.
Mm-hmm.
And he was taught through the upper intermediate stages of what then was called coordinate remote viewing. Dave was discharged from the Army for less than honorable conditions, and some of your listeners who care to familiarize themselves with Dave's case know that he wrote a book, Psychic Warrior.
Mm-hmm.
And Dave has been in trouble both in the military and has been accused of prevarication in a lot of his public works. And I think the best assessment that a reader or someone who cared to inquire about David Morehouse could make would be simply to go out and listen to what he's done and see what he said and to judge them themselves. I'm not going to do that.
All right, Buchanan, Courtney Brown, others, remote viewers are all at each other's throats.
Well,
how come?
There's a lot of egos involved here. Vanity, egos, the megalomania. It's the same as any other tightly controlled discipline. Plus, you've got disinformation and damage control. When SciTech was founded, and I did work for the United Nations, and on Saddam Hussein's locating Saddam Hussein's biological warfare stockpiles and the National Security Council,
mm-hmm.
we broke the news of the existence of this kind of technology. And people thought that I would go directly to jail, not pass go.
Right.
And when they saw that I did not, they began to squeak. But many of the people that were involved in the unit were only, they were either involved in an administrative capacity or they were merely remote viewers. They did not know how to analyze their own work, nor did they know how to engineer a problem to be successfully executed. But I was both their training officer, I trained them, and I was the operations officer for the unit. So I had both skills. So, again, we're dealing lots of problems.
Actually, Ed, it's not at all unlike MUFON itself, or many, many other organizations. I have been dealing with ufologists for years, and they're all at each other's throats constantly, accusing each other of being CIA agents and disinformation agents. And
a lot of internecine warfare.
That's right.
And my comment, I really rather just lay it to rest by saying that people can talk about history. They can write about history, but in terms of the present and the future, delivering the goods, only SciTech can do that. We're the only ones with the expertise. No one else, as you can see, or any of your listeners, is willing to go online out and stick their neck and their corporation online and say, this is how Philip Taylor Kramer died, or this is how TWA Flight 800 broke, on and on and on. And we do that because the confidence factors are extremely high. In fact, they're 100%.
Can you tell me the date when you're going to shut the doors, close SciTech, and head west?
Well, it'll be 98. We will no longer be training in Beverly Hills office in 97. We'll pack up and move in 98. But we will be on the World Wide Web training young people, where I'm particularly interested in young people.
So wherever you are, you'll be on the web.
I'll be on the web and on this phone, probably talking to you as
right.
AM waves propagate.
All right. This may be too political, but it is an obvious question. If the world is going to face the kind of food shortages that you're talking about, and soon, Then there are considerations with regard to Red China, what used to be the Soviet Union, all the remaining nuclear weapons. One good reason to have a big war, Ed, has always been, other than religion, food. And what will happen geopolitically, do you think, once this catastrophe begins to unfold?
Keep your head down. I think that this is not based upon remote viewing, but based upon my work in the intelligence field. I think you're going to see a terrorist situation with certain portions of rocket forces in certain foreign countries who command the keys and the locks for nuclear weapons and have the weapons themselves. Why shouldn't I? If I were a Ukrainian commander and my family was hungry and my troops were hungry, mm-hmm. and I had access to nuclear weapons, mm-hmm. I think what I would do is I would point one of the weapons at the People's Republic of China,
mm-hmm.
and I would demand that the United States deliver up a certain quantity of gold and food to me, or I would launch the weapons at China. Yep, I think that's what I'd do if I were pressed to the wall.
I can't say that I would disagree with that.
So watch for things that grave in the future that will eclipse a lot of our local problems very rapidly.
So things are going to get bad, and they're going to get bad quickly.
Geopolitically as well as ecologically.
Mm-hmm. Are there any, you talked about Los Angeles, are there any geophysical events that you would care to attach or can attach a specific timeline to?
Not specific. I'll say we're going to have another quake here in around 14 or 18 months. And if you really are interested in those kinds of things, then we'll pin it down to day and hour. But it's so what? Buildings are going to shake. The earth is going to quake. And we may lose a few people here and there, but it won't be as big as the last one. But I know that timelines are important to some people. And that would be a good proof of principle, I think, to pin down the next quake, and I think we'll do that.
All right. A little bit of background: the cylindrical object that had been attached to or with Hale-Bopp, which has now left Hale-Bopp, and you believe is on the way toward Earth, or maybe even be close now.
Yes.
Why Hale-Bopp, and who is behind it? What do you know about that?
The agencies that are behind that particular special delivery package don't appear to be necessarily human or humanoid. That's all I want to say about that, because it just gets too
strange,
far beyond strange. And I think that it's I'm not sure about the rest of the agenda. Comets are historically harbingers of things to come and change, and
yes.
This is a big comet, so a big change, all those kinds of things. It reminds me in certain ways of tactical situations, in a nice tactic, a way to infiltrate special forces into a battlefield is to fly them above a bomb drop. And drop and have the parachutists exit the aircraft while the bombs are in front of them. The bombs hit the ground, the paratroopers land, and they can virtually pack up and leave. And people are so shook up they can't see, and their heads are still rattling. And by the time they can see straight, the paratroopers have infiltrated into the woodwork. Well, this reminds me of this thing: hitching a ride on the back or on the comet itself. There are certain analogies there that are similar to that tactical situation.
Ed.
Yes.
I'm trying to think of exactly.
Let me talk to you about the food.
How to phrase this? Well, we certainly can get to that. But this again, this object that is quickly headed our way. You, I believe, referred, and I'm trying to be careful here, but I think you referred to us once as a virus or a cancer.
And this is the antidote.
And that this is the antidote or the penicillin for Mother Earth.
Yes, we're very anthropocentric. We're very human-oriented, thinking that we're on the top of the food chain and that we can destroy the very ground that we stand on that gives us life. And this is an antidote for Earth. That's our perspective in-house. And an antibiotic, antibio, and it's going to have a very great curative effect. It's going to take away the food supply for the disease.
And because of this barrier that you see out not very far before or right around 2000, you simply can't tell us how we're going to fare. You can tell us in the short term how we can live.
And survive. Uh-huh.
And survive. But you can't tell us, can you, long-term, about our children's survival?
I'll say one thing, Art, and that is that our children and their children will be here with another race, and they will rebuild the planet together. There will be another race that's here after this specific event that I'm talking about, this discontinuity. And together, a la alienation, they will rebuild the planet.
I wonder if a future generation of Earth dwellers will thank whoever is sending this little package our way, or curse them and think of them now as we do the Nazis with their death camps. How will history, do you suppose, view what is going to occur, Ed?
Well, it's an interesting question from another perspective, because time travel is very real in the future, and so many of the devices, objects, some manned, some unmanned, that we see in our skies and have for a couple of decades,
UFOs,
are actually ourselves, some of our future selves coming back to take a look. So, you know, you can add that to the complexity of the situation. How they actually will view us or do view us now is problematic.
Well, then that's got to be what you're calling the out years.
That's correct.
Which would indicate there is some form of survival and some form of high-tech survival if they're capable of time travel. You're saying that a lot of the UFOs we see are from our future. And they are our descendants.
That's correct. Witness Art's part.
Yeah, Art's parts. All right, Ed. What I would like to do is take about an hour, if you're willing, and I think we've covered an awful lot of territory, and allow the audience to begin asking you some questions. Would you be up for that?
I'd be glad to. As long as before your show is finished, I can have about 10 minutes to really specifically tell your listeners exactly which what survival food that I'm talking about.
Would you like it at the beginning of this next hour or at the end of the session? Your choice.
We can do it at the end.
All right. Stand by, Ed, and we'll get back to you. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from March 6th, 1997.
Red roses too, I see them blue. about me and you, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue and clouds of white, the bright blessed day, the dark sacred night, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world. The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the sky.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from March 6, 1997.
And somehow, when Ed is here, this one always seems right on the money, if you know what I mean.
I hear babies cry. I watch them grow. They like much more. What a wonderful world.
Just kind of works, huh? Back now to Major Ed Dames. Major Dames.
Still here, Art.
Still there, good. Here they come. First time caller line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Good morning.
Good morning. Mr. Dames, I have a couple of questions for you.
Sure.
First of all, I was wondering, are you familiar with Duncan Cameron of the Montauk experiment?
I'm familiar with rumors and conspiracies surrounding the word Montauk and the base, uh-huh.
Okay, well, supposedly, I've been to a couple of his seminars, and he claims to be one of the remote viewers that was used out there. He states that the space-time continuum disruption that occurred in 43 and 83 at the Philadelphia experiment is what allowed a gateway for ETs to be able to come to Earth.
All right. Anything to that, or is that part of the rumor conspiracy stuff, Ed?
Ho-hum. What can I say? How can I comment on something like that?
Have you ever looked at the Philadelphia experiment?
I think I've talked about that particular experiment on your show before. I mentioned, wasn't that covered earlier in an earlier show? That it was an experiment in radar invisibility, and it did not open a space-time continuum or close one. But what it did was set a precedent for burning out nervous systems, in human beings, short of a lightning stroke. So when the people walked off, when the sailors and other civilians walked off that ship, they were the walking dead. They were essentially burned out nervous systems. And before they died, they did not know what time it was, what day it was, and where they were. And that led their families to suspect that all kinds of things, all kinds of conspiracies grew as a result of that, particularly surrounding the idea that these people did not know what day it was and what time it was.
All right. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm calling from Sedona, Arizona.
Oh, magical Sedona.
I got a question for Ed, and then I got a statement. Maybe he can clarify. His timelines, to me, seem to be disjointed.
In what sense?
Well, on another show, he said that about 80% of us were going to be wiped out because of weather changes and 300-mile-an-hour winds. Now it's something from Hale Bob.
Mm-hmm.
And also, on another show, he said this global economic crash was going to be by the end of 1997. Now he says summer 98, and also if 80% of us are going to be wiped out, what's the point of him being on internet to teach all these young people remote viewing?
All right. Pause now for your answer. Ed, to the degree that she suggested you first talked about the winds, the jet stream coming down on deck, and a lot of people dead, you also talked about babies dying. These were in early shows some time ago, and the plant pathogen was, as of your last appearance on this program, is there a problem there, or does it all fit together?
No, just re-listen to the tapes. And it's kind of mixing and matching. I guess I've been on a little bit too much, and there's too much. There's a lot of mixing and matching there also. But I would like to say one thing with regard to this, and that is, yes, I am I'll be on the internet in 98, because all bets are off in mid 98, and especially at the end of 98, we just don't know what's going to happen, and we don't have any real timelines after the end of 98.
SciTech has made a couple of mistakes. Again, referring back to the tape. And there was one specific that you admitted to, and then one you didn't admit to. The one you admitted to occurred during the Gulf War, and I believe that you suggested you had remotely viewed what you thought was a nuclear detonation of some sort.
A tactical nuclear explosion.
Tactical nuke, uh-huh. Yeah. Which, in fact, turned out to be a fuel-air explosion.
That's correct.
Which, of course, is the you don't want to say the next best thing to, but the closest thing to a nuclear detonation, and I suppose would look very much the same with a big cloud and all that.
Yeah, we didn't explore it any further. We automatically assumed that. See, this is where analysis can really get you. Your remote viewing can be dead on, and it better be if you work for my company. But analysis can be faulty, and in this case, it was my mistake, and I took responsibility for it to our client that it was indeed a fuel air explosive. But that was many years ago, and we have installed all kinds of cross checks now to make sure that doesn't happen again.
All right, East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hello.
Hello, Major.
Hi.
Art, this is Rich out in Minnesota.
Yes, sir.
My question, I have something to add that might be connected to my question, but my question is, when these people buy these courses, will you do, like, investigation background check, like maybe it remote view them?
Oh, yeah. In other words, are you going to qualify the people you sell these things to, Ed, in any way at all?
It, absolutely not. It's... We're putting fire into the hands of people. What they do with it is up to them.
Okay. Because I don't know. I think I might have a clue for you. If you're remote view Rich and take a look up on his mirror. Thank you.
You're welcome. So, in other words, you're just turning this technology loose.
That's correct.
Ed, and what people do with it is what people will do with it. There are good and bad people out there. Are you at all concerned about what may occur? I mean, that many people out there in the plane remote viewing, I think I asked you this earlier, but are there not possible consequences to that?
I can only look at my own experience and witness what this has done to and for me and to and for others around me. And I think that it is 95% positive nominally and 5% negative.
In your training, in your remote viewing training there at SciTech, with regard to the number of people that you have trained, have you turned people down?
Yes, we have. If we feel that someone is not balanced, mentally and emotionally balanced, then this kind of revelatory skill is going to send them over the edge.
So then how do you reconcile the tapes?
It's a crapshoot. We're going to have to. We're taking chances, and I think that in the end, it's going to be predominantly positive.
So there is going to be some negative result to it, but on balance, it's better to let this out to the world than not.
I think so. In fact, I think it would be it would be less than altruistic not to. I would have given anything to learn this at the time I learned it. I was lucky enough to learn it. And I don't think I would want to deny that this kind of technology should not lie in the hand of a government or a group or a corporation. And when you look at the cost of the tapes and what people are getting, the kind of skill, that's not a lot of money.
I know. As a matter of fact, just from the financial end of it for a second, what kind of reaction has there been among the other remote viewers who give training courses for thousands of dollars, which has been the standard previous to your release of these tapes? What kind of reaction has there been? Probably not very good, huh?
The jig's up for them. It'll put them out of business, completely out of business, because these are far superior techniques to what they are teaching. They don't have effective techniques, and the intermediate course alone, not to mention the advanced courses that are coming, are enough to put these people out of business. They'll want to have these tapes to learn it themselves because they don't have that level of expertise.
So SciTech is becoming the Walmart of remote viewing.
We're becoming the lingua franca, the Walmart, and the standard for remote viewing.
West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hello.
Boy, oh boy, am I on Art Bell.
Yep.
It's been a while. Hey, Art, you got me through some long college nights. Now I'm just about to graduate, and I want to thank you for that. Am I on with Mr. Ed Lame?
No, that's not. Look, I said earlier, caller, you've got a choice. If you're going to be rude, I'm going to blow you out of here like a bad dream. You can ask.
I have to check my notes.
Check your brain. Now, if you do it again, I'll blow you out of here. If you have a serious question, proceed.
He was talking about earthquakes, and he said cavalierly about something about a few people were going to die. Now I just tapped in with DR, and was he talking about the West Coast?
Yes, Los Angeles.
Los Angeles. Okay, I live out in Los Angeles, and I don't take it too likely that a few people are going to die, because that could be my mother, that could be my father. And I just feel that if we have a CR, Nostradamus in our midst, that we should know, where's that third place he's going to be hanging out at? Where are these? I want to know all three of them so we can get to high ground. So, we're not going to get hit by whatever.
Well, he gave you two of them, and if you're too lame to make it to one of them, that's your problem, not his. And with regard to the earthquake, he said that it would be of a lesser magnitude than the last, which means that it's not going to be particularly life-threatening. Would that be right, Ed?
That's correct. And anybody that learns the techniques can remote view where I'll be.
I just don't know what's the matter with people that they can't approach something controversial with a hard question without being rude. It's too bad. It's a sign of the 90s. And maybe it's a sign that we need some biological correction. First time caller line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hello. Hello. Going once, going twice, gone. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Yes, calling from Anchorage.
Yes, sir.
I think this Ed Dames is a phony.
Well, you're on the air with him. So, what do you think is phony about it?
Well, for example, that one gal asked a question, and you give, well, it's a mix and match thing. She asked some definite things. But the type of things that you're coming up with...
Well, it was mix and match, all right?
Yeah.
Sir, I followed that up by indeed saying that Ed had first talked of the high winds, and then of the babies dying, and then of the plant pathogen, but they all lead to about the same place. Now, if you see a problem, ask a specific question.
Okay, the type of things you're coming up with are new world insider information, and you're a new worlder, and being working for the UN, you're an insider.
You mean me or Ed?
I'm talking about Ed. You too.
Me too. Oh, I see. Okay, Ed, we're both working for the New World Order.
Let's see. The only work I did for the UN was to find Saddam Hussein's biological warfare stockpiles, because the CIA, MI5 and 6 and the KGB and the UN couldn't find them. So now what does that make me?
I don't know. Are you CFR, Ed?
Are we both in that together now? I got to check my mail.
Thanks, pal.
I didn't know if I was recruited.
East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Good morning.
Yes, sir. This is Bill. I'm calling from Michigan.
Hi, Bill.
And I'm curious. I got two quick questions. I'm getting an echo here.
All right. Go ahead.
I'm wondering if you are in the act of remote viewing and your body is disturbed, can you be separated or lose your consciousness?
No. You're thinking of altered states.
Okay.
Using technical remote viewing, you're extremely alert. It's very much like working a math problem. Think of that. It might be a little difficult for someone to get your attention. They may have to call your name twice.
Okay.
But you'd have to do the same thing if you're working a math problem or engrossed in a book. Very high attention.
Okay. I got one other thing. I'm reading a book now called Meditative States in Tibetan Buddhism, and it talks about formless absorption. And if you can hone that discipline, would that help me in your discipline?
No, it wouldn't. It helps your body. It helps your health state. I was a student of Zen in my younger days. It helps you to become more healthy, but it doesn't do anything to help your remote viewing other than give you a healthy body, and that helps.
Mm-hmm. And an interesting point. Drugs hurt, don't they?
They very much do.
All right. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Ed Dames. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hello, where are you?
Is this Art?
Yes, where are you, sir?
I'm in Arizona.
Arizona. You have a question?
Yeah, I do.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I want to know something with 24 hours. Within 24 hours, you can tell us that would happen.
No, I don't have to ask you that. I can tell you that. The answer is no, and it goes back to a basic understanding of what remote viewing is. People, Ed, come to you and they think you're a psychic.
Yeah, it's the crystal ball stuff.
Yeah, the crystal ball. In other words,
we can
immediately
do crystal
ball look
stuff,
in your crystal
ball. But we do it a different way.
that's right. Remote viewing is a long, disciplined process that takes many people quite a bit of work, and you just don't say, tell me what's going to happen tomorrow. But people are impatient, and that's what they want, and so it just is not the way it works. So sorry to disappoint, caller.
Now, Art, you don't have to work as a team to achieve results.
Understood. Understood. But it's not as though you can right now go into a slightly altered state and say tomorrow the market will do the following. Am I correct?
That's correct.
Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hello.
Hi, I'm calling from L.A. I just wanted to say that I think what Ed is saying is right on the money. I've been taking blue-green algae now for quite a while. As a food supplement, but I really do believe it is a food and not a supplement. Your guest, Wayne Green, was on a while ago, and he recommended some books, and I did pick up one of them called Secrets of the Soil, and I was wondering if, Dames, if you were familiar with, I believe his name is Holman, Daryl Coleman.
No.
He I think, is the one who discovered the resource of a blue-green algae located in Klamath Falls in Oregon.
Klamath Falls. It's not blue-green algae that is going to be the staple. It's green algae, and specifically chlorella.
Oh.
And one particular species of it is better. It has more proteins. So, and I'll get into that later.
Okay, I didn't know that. Also, you were talking earlier about an event that was going to happen between 1999 and 2001. Now, is that, I take it that's before, like, the out years? Is that correct?
I think it's a midterm in terms of our in our vernacular.
In other words, in summer of 98, the severe problems will begin somewhere around the turn of the century. Some sort of event occurs. So middle out years is the way to put it, I guess, huh? Is that right, Ed?
Well, I guess you could call it that. I mean, I'm not going to quibble over the terminology. I'll just say that we have not yet pinpointed, but we will, this event that occurs between 99 and 2001, and it's the one-time global event that changes everything and everybody all at once.
All right.
That's all I can say about it right now because we don't understand it.
Beyond that, well, no, that'll do just fine. Ed Dames, sit tight. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from March 6th, 1997. You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from March 6th, 1997.
Once again, here I am. Good morning, everybody. Ed Dames back answering questions for about the next 15. Then I promised him 10 uninterrupted minutes to talk about food, and we will indeed do that. All right. Back now to Major Ed Dames. Major Dames, ready?
Still ready. Still here.
All right. Still ready on this end, too. First time caller line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Good morning.
Hi, this is Terry. I'm in Reno.
Hi, Terry.
First of all, I want to thank Ed Dames for all the work he's done. I believe that he's doing a very good work for humanity. And I want to ask him about this spiritual event. Have you heard of a man by the name of Drumvalo Melchizedek?
Yes.
Okay. I went to a week-long workshop to basically learn how to deal with this coming event. And he spoke of it in depth. And I just want to know if you want to say anything about that.
I'm only familiar with the individual indirectly, and I'm not familiar with his message, so I can't speak about it.
All right. Fair enough. Wild card line, you're on the air with Ed Dames. Hi. Hello there. Going once. Going twice. See, they're sitting there listening to the radio. Too bad they missed it. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
I have three items.
All right. Where are you, sir?
I'm the one from Washington, D.C.
Washington, D.C., all right.
Okay. Just as Dr. Lynn Horowitz contends Ebola and AIDS are man-made, and that Joyce Riley contends the Gulf War was a big laboratory experiment.
Yes.
If Ed Dames, contention becomes a fact that Africa is showered with plant pathogens, I believe those pathogens won't be coming from non-humans, but rather man-made and dropped on us. There's another plague like the others. Art, would you do some reverse speech of this show? That's one.
Well, I don't do reverse speech. That's the purview of a guest that I have on from time to time, as you well know. So
I do, and you had offered previously to do reverse speech, have David John Oates do some reverse speech on someone else that appeared on your show. So I'm asking you.
I absolutely. I mean, look, anybody who appears on my show is subject to the recording of and the reverse speech tactics of Mr. Oates. So, yes.
Okay.
Next question.
Two items. These are shorter. I heard here recently, firsthand, remote viewer and author, psychic warrior author David Morehouse state TWA 800 was hit with a high energy beam. Would you allow him and Major Dames to come on the show at the same time together?
Well, I'm not sure what the point would be. Major Dames has already commented on Mr. Morehouse, and they have diverging views of what happened to Flight 800.
I'm not going to do that for another reason, Art.
Yeah, plus, what's the point? In other words, the NTSB will clear up who's correct eventually.
Okay, well, then that would be my final point. Contrary to what Major Dames says, the National Transportation Safety Board is very much a political animal, and this is spelled out in great detail.
So, in other words, you're saying you're not going to believe what they say anyway?
No, you're putting words in my mouth. I just allow me to finish what I'm saying.
Please do.
This is spelled out in great detail in a book called Defrauding America, written by Rodney Stitch, who was a former investigator.
I know about Mr. Stitch, yes.
Would you have him on your show, Art?
I think Mr. Stitch has as wild an idea or concept as any remote viewer I've heard of.
What do you base that on? He was an investigator for the FAA for a number of years.
And he would come on and he would say, don't believe a word they would say, wouldn't he?
I don't know. Again, you're putting
words
in
my mouth.
Yes,
you do know. If you have read what Mr. Stitch has written, then you know I'm right.
As a matter of fact, I know that you're not right, because I have documents that substantiate his book from independent sources myself.
All right, well, you're wrong. You're just flat wrong. He would say that he would not believe a word they would say. That's exactly what he would say, and I don't want to get into an argument about it. I just happen to know that's true with regard to Mr. Stitch, because we've had people here on the air talking about what Mr. Stitch has said about Flight 800. So We'll leave that there. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hello.
Hello, this is PJ from Denver, Colorado.
PJ, you're going to have to speak up good and loud for us.
Sure, Ed, thanks for coming on, and please keep on coming on because you challenge people to think. I'm Catholic, and there are a couple of Catholic prophecies that say, one from Medjugorje, Croatia, and one from Garabandal, Spain, which says there's going to be a major spiritual event in which mankind will feel this change throughout the world, inside of each man, and that there is going to be a permanent sign left either in Garabandal, Spain, where people can come to see this change. Ed, my question is, could this remote viewing that you're seeing of this phenomenal change be the same thing that these visionaries in Medjugorje and Garabandal are predicting?
I'm not directly or indirectly familiar with... I know about the events at Medjugorje, but I'm not familiar with the one in Spain. And all I can say is that's as close to anything that I know right now, because I just don't know how to put my finger on this. It is a permanent change. It is immediate. It's felt globally, and that's as good a call as any.
All right, let me hit you with one close to that, Ed, and that is biblical scholars would be familiar with the term wormwood, which is something that would poison a substantial portion of the earth.
Mm-hmm.
Would it be unreasonable to compare your cylindrical object headed toward Earth to wormwood?
I think there's a pretty good correspondence, according to Ed Damus. I think that I would call that wormwood.
Mm-hmm. First time caller line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hi.
Hi, this is Pat from Oregon.
Yes, sir.
And I was curious about Ed Dames, these tapes that he's going to have out.
Yes.
Was there any kind of guarantee that goes with them? I know you're so fond of them.
A guarantee.
I mean, yeah. What if you buy them and it just don't work?
Yeah, actually, we had a guarantee, but I removed it.
Oh, okay.
So no, the guarantee's not there anymore.
Okay.
No, I don't know how you would put a guarantee.
Well, the techniques are really pretty fascinating, Art. They're just it is the language for how the syntax and the grammar for how unconscious communicates with conscious awareness, and it's cut and dry. You just stick you follow the tapes and the lectures and you do it and it happens. But still, there's going to be people who give it who buy them just to have it sit on the shelf, and they really don't attend to the lectures, and,
sure.
And it won't work for them.
All right. I want you to listen to this. I think it's quite serious, Ed, and it will probably launch you into what you want to say, and then if we have time at the end, we'll take another call or two. Art, hello. I am a PhD scientist who has grown and studied algae since the late 1970s. I currently work at a major U.S. university, UC... Well, he says, please don't give that out. Sir, you've got to be very careful when you don't want me to give out university names. The chlorella, which Major Dames mentions, is one of the easiest algae to grow. It is, or one of its close relatives, often forms green scum on aquaria. In the lab, we grow it with little more than a few inorganic salts, basically a very dilute fertilizer solution. It also grows well in what amounts to sterilized mud water, or, quote, soil water medium, end quote, as it is called by biologists. The required apparatus to grow them is also exceedingly simple. I used to grow them with nothing more than a jar of soil water medium whose mouth was stopped with a cotton plug set on a window pane for light. Larger quantities can easily be grown in 5-gallon water jugs. Nutritional analysis that I've seen show chlorella to be a very good food source. It could be considered as something similar to spinach leaves, which have been run through a blender. Incidentally, other microscopic algae are also currently being used for food. An example would be the blue-green algae spirulina, I believe it is, which is available now from health food stores, and the professor gives his name and his university, but does not wish it on the air. Sound about right, Ed?
He sounds like a botanist. he's talking about the plants themselves and growing. He does not sound like he's familiar really with the nutritional value of these algae.
Okay.
But I wanted to talk to you about them. Again, when we're looking at the survivors on barren wasteland, they have these vats full of chlorella. Chlorella is an algae, and I mentioned that this plant pathogen that's going to spread like wildfire and sweep through continents, taking out land plants, green plants. Luckily, based upon our work, it is not going to affect plants in the sea, most of which are algae, brown, blue-green, blue, and green. We're very lucky because they make up the majority of the phytoplankton, the first 200 feet generally of the ocean, that produce a great deal of the oxygen that we breathe. So we're quite lucky in that regard. But what do we do for food? Well, in these tanks, the substance of which people were eating is chlorella. Chlorella is an algae. It's been around on Earth for about 2.5 billion years. It was here when the ozone layer was little or nothing. That means it loves UV. It thrives in a lot of sunlight and high levels of ultraviolet radiation.
Mm-hmm.
And it thrives under those conditions where mammals and many other animals and plants will die. So that's a good thing, because those are the kinds of conditions we're entering. Don't go out in the sun. But this particular algae has all of the vital amino acids that we require as human beings, and it's very healthy to boot. It tastes like something terrible. I mean, it's bland as can be, as those healthful food aficionados are already aware. I just tried the stuff to see what it would be like after having discovered that this is what people are surviving on. It is first a food supplement, and then it becomes a staple. And as this doctor who faxed you the letter mentioned, it is extremely easy to grow. It is a freshwater algae, and it is indeed the kind of pond scum and the algae you see in your aquarium once in a while,
great.
If you don't clean it.
Yum.
And in concentration, and when prepared and dried and prepared a certain way that commercial companies prepare it now, very well, I might add, when it's eaten, it can be used solely as a food source, nothing else. And it's going to be, and it'll be the thing that saves us. We'll survive only because, we'll weather the storm only because this algae will become our food. It'll become, green algae cakes will become the money of the future, the lingua franca, because you can't eat gold.
No, you can't eat gold.
And another interesting thing about this particular species of algae, it's extremely effective at repairing DNA damage. So even if the ozone problem not only persists and gets much worse, this thing still seems to repair itself. And it has a very large central nucleus, very large. And that means that genetic engineering can go in there and very easily manipulate that central nucleus.
Uh-huh.
And change it, perhaps make it taste better or increase the protein percentage. Right now it has naturally occurring chlorella has about 2-3% protein, which means you have to eat a lot of it to eat 10 grams a day, which is generally an average to sustain a human being. And that's a lot of algae. If you genetically engineer it to produce more protein, maybe we can get away with eating less of it.
Would we be healthier people if that's all we were eating? In other words, it would sustain us with enough nutrition. Would it actually make us healthier?
You know what, Art? The answer is yes, surprisingly. It's shockingly so.
That would be for those of us who don't prefer death.
That's right. I mean, we'd probably be strangling each other if they don't do something with the taste of this. But we'd be very healthy when we did it.
Well, maybe they can get it up to where it tastes like quarter pounder, there'd be no problem.
But I'm very serious about
it. I know you are.
Many years to identify this particular food source, and because it is so cheap and it's so readily available, and it's already it was recognized as a potential food source 20 years ago, and it's just there were so many things that are much more tasty that we don't turn to it as a food, but it does. It is extremely healthy.
Well, I thought it was worth reading from the professor. Basically, you know, he was shocked and decided to back you up right away, saying you're absolutely right. Under those conditions, that would be the food source that would work. So you apparently are right about that.
Well, that, again, we trust our work, our expertise, and we did identify it as chlorella. And that is a freshwater algae, the one that you see that makes most of the freshwaters green, pond scum, essentially. And prepared correctly, it is the healthiest thing around, and indeed, it may be the only thing around.
All right.
Sooner than you think.
This has been a night full of specifics. Despite what the disgruntled, uncivilized have spewed forth. And by the way, while I'm on that subject, Ed, there have been a couple of very rude people. Inevitably, there always are. We are becoming not more, but very much less civilized, Ed. And I consider that to be part of what I call my little word, the phrase, the quickening.
We're barbarians, and we've turned our earth into a cesspool.
I might not have quite said it that way, but that is basically what's going on right now. And is that process going to continue to quicken and worsen?
It's a Mad Max scenario, Art, I'm afraid.
Mad Max. All right, so you're going to pick a Polynesian island where you have internet access and some sort of satellite phone so you can get back to me and actually be on the air and be on the internet and still communicate with the world, albeit not from Los Angeles.
That's correct.
All right, my friend. I want to thank you for being here. It has been an intriguing night. I wish you a good night's sleep, even if a lot of people out there now will not have one.
It's always a pleasure, Art.
Thank you, Ed, and good night.
Okay, good night.
That's Major SciTech's Major Ed Dames. Having said that, if you've got your recorders ready, so many have requested it out there, and for those of you that have never heard it, you're in for quite an experience. What I want you to do is listen very closely to the words. You will recognize many of the voices. Here it is.
I was a highwayman. Along the coach roads I did ride, with sword and pistol by my side. Many a young maid lost her baubles to my trade. Many a soldier shed his lifeblood on my blade. The bastards hung me in the spring of 25, but I am still alive.
I was a sailor, I was born upon the tide. With the sea I did abide. I sailed a schooner around the Horn of Mexico. I went aloft to furl the mainsail in a blow. And when the yards broke off, they said that I got killed. But I'm living still. I was a dam builder across a river deep and wide, where steel and water did collide. A place called Boulder on the Wild Colorado. I slipped and fell into the wet concrete below. They buried me in that gray tomb that knows no sound. But I'm still around. I'll always be around, around, and around, and around. I fly a starship across the universe divide. And when I reach the other side, I'll find a place to rest my spirit if I can. Perhaps I may become a highwayman again. Or I may simply be a single drop of rain. But I will remain. I'll be back again and again and again and again and again.
That's it. That song has a lot of meaning for me. It always has, and I'm glad that so many of you have enjoyed it and requested it so frequently. It is Waylon Jennings, Willie Nelson, Johnny Cash, and Kris Kristofferson. All right. From Art Bell in the High Desert, keep your eyes on the sky. Good night.